Hello, beautiful people. This episode and conversation is so near and dear to my heart because it started in 2019 where this man, Les Howard, gave me a book recommendation in the back of an Uber, A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle. And I loved the book so much that I eventually found a way to get in contact with him and we had this conversation. What was so fascinating was Les's story. I mean, he was at one point homeless and he works his way to get a master's degree and then start helping people. And in this conversation, we spoke about all that, what he's learned from his experiences. And I had no idea prior to this conversation. I'd only spoken to him one other time, and that was in the back of an Uber. I adore this conversation. I'm so grateful for it. And I hope you are as well. If you have any thoughts about the conversation, let me know on Twitter at HeyDannyMiranda. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. And I would love to hear what part of this episode, if any, made an impact on you. Thank you for listening. And I'm excited to give you this conversation with Les Howard.
Interesting people, thought-provoking conversations, nutrition for your brain. Journey through the minds of the world's top performers and discover what it really takes to achieve your highest version. This is the Danny Miranda Podcast.
So, Leslie, first of all, you drove me in an Uber or Lyft. I'm not sure which one it was, but you drove me in Minneapolis, and we had this great conversation, and you recommended this book, A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle, and I read it the following month. I was blown away. So much of the questions that I had in my life were answered by the book, and I'm extremely grateful for you for giving me this text. So thank you. I really appreciate it.
Hey, glad to do it.
Yeah. And so in this conversation, I want to learn more about your life story and how you came across this book, what went on in your life. And I guess a good place to start is for you to introduce yourself.
Okay. I'm Les Howard. I don't know what all you want me to tell about myself. You want me to tell my life story or?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Well, anyway, I'm the oldest of 12 children. My mother had 12 kids, right? And so I'm the oldest. I am 65 years old. I am a veteran from the Marine Corps back in the 70s, right at the end of the Vietnam War. I am a former mental health case manager in Dakota County in Minnesota, where I went out to community case management, clients in the community. And I also did some mental health work in the hospitals and the lockdown unit. What else? And the way I came up on that book, the question you asked was, I don't know if you ever seen these advertisements on Facebook, and they tell all the books that's recommended if you want to do some of the things that successful people do. And that was one thing was read a book a month, and they recommended some books. And then Eckhart Tolle, when I heard about his book regarding staying in the now, I don't know if you read that book, The Power of Now, that was the first book he wrote. And then the second book, you know, about finding out what your purpose is on the earth. I hadn't read that. I didn't read that first. I read the Power of Now first. Then when I found out about the other book, I read that book. And I think the second book, Finding Out Your Purpose on Earth, is better than his first book. And then I heard that was one of Oprah's picks before I read it. And I read that book and it totally impacted me as far as learning how to keep myself calm, learning that how not to react, learning how to forgive people and just accepting people just the way they are and things like that. It really impacted me in that way, because sometimes, just like the book talks about, your past experiences in life, the way you were raised, can cause you to have certain opinions or biases when it comes to other people. And then, you know, if you're not aware of it, you can become bitter, angry, and all that stuff. But that book kind of opened me up to understanding other people, actually.
So let's go into your childhood. What was that like?
Well, I worked from the age of 7 years old. We were poor. We were poor. And my mother had 7 kids in 7 years, and I'm the oldest. So I started working in the fields at 7 years old, bean fields down in Homestead, Florida. I'm down in Florida right now. I decided to come down here to take care of something, and actually decided to stay after visiting for a while. So I got to go back to Minnesota and straighten some things out. But anyway, yeah, I grew up in the South in Homestead, Florida, and like I said, my mother had 12 kids and I grew up working, doing stuff. I really didn't have, you know, kids get out and play and do different things like that. I really didn't have that growing up. You know, I had to take care of my siblings, you know, go to work. Sometimes I had to be taken out of school to go to work, with my mother. And so, it was tough. It was tough growing up, in our house because there were so many of us.
What was the most difficult part about having so many siblings?
Well, being the oldest, man. I mean, being the oldest, you got all these responsibilities, you know, as a kid. You got to grow up real quick. And you don't have time to, you know, kids nowadays play. They got the video games and all that stuff. I mean, you know, I didn't have a lot of time to play. We didn't have video games back then, but I didn't have a lot of time to play. I had work to do in the fields, and I had work to do at home as the oldest, you know, helping out around the house. So yeah, it was tough.
And then you said you joined the military at some point?
Yeah, actually, I left home at 16. And then I had a friend who went to the military who was maybe a couple of years older than I was, went to the Marine Corps. And he came back with that uniform on, and I liked the uniform, and I wanted to get away. It's funny. I wanted to get away from home because of all the responsibilities and the authority, and I joined the Marine Corps at 17.
That's more responsibilities.
Right.
And more dealing with authority.
Right, exactly. You know, but as a teenager, you know, you ain't thinking. You just, you know, you just want to do stuff and get away, and that's how I felt. So I joined in 17. My mother had to sign for me, and I went in at 17. So
was it difficult to convince her to sign for you?
Yes, indeed. We grew up going to church at least 3 or 4 days out of a week. And in those days, the pastor had a lot of authority, okay? And so when I decided to go, my mom said, no. She said, you're not going anywhere, you know. So the pastor got wind of it, and he said to her, sign the papers and let him go. And that's how I got to go. So
how did you convince the pastor to let your mom sign the papers?
I didn't. Well, I don't know if I convinced him. He, during that time, I was rebelling. At 16, I was rebelling against, you know, not being able to do things. And so, actually, I dropped out of high school. Back in those days, you could do that. And I joined. So I don't know if I convinced him so much. Things just kept coming up where I was rebelling a lot and doing things, running away from home, stuff like that when I was 16. And then when I turned 17, I said, this is an opportunity right here for me to go in the military. And I'm going. And so when he got wind of it, he talked to her and he heard that I was trying to get her to sign. And so he just he advised her to sign them. So.
And then you join the military. What do you learn trying to, you're fighting from authority or running from authority, but then you find probably more authority. What was that like in the military? What type of lessons did you learn?
You know, I'm not going to lie to you, Danny. I cried for 2 weeks after I joined because I was in boot camp. I don't know if you know anything about Marine Corps boot camp. It was really tough. I woke up crying for 2 weeks because, you know, you get yelled at. You know, back in those days, recruits got hit, kicked, all that kind of stuff back in the 70s. And, you know, they were calling themselves toughening you up and things like that. And a lot of they don't do that now. But back in those days, they really, really used that technique to toughen you up, you know, beat you over the head and call you all kind of names and all that kind of stuff. This is during Vietnam going in, you know, when I went in, Vietnam was going on. But by the time I got out of boot camp, it was over. I was learning. You know, young kid, 17 years old, and I didn't know what I was doing. I did not know what I was doing. So, but it was good. I'm glad I joined. I got a lot out of it as far as being responsible, you know, and submitting to authority and things like that. I got that out of it. And so, some toughness, you know, being able to endure things more. So that's what I got out of it.
And then how far after did you end up being out of the military? How long were you in the military?
3 years. 3 years, yeah. I was in. And 3 years.
And then what happened next in the story?
Well, what happened next was I got a job in the steel mill, and I worked in the steel mill. And after that, I got a job in the post office, and I carried mail in Chicago for 5 years. And I got really caught up in drugs and alcohol during that time. And so, I mean, the post office, you know, partied a lot. And so, when I grew up, like I said, I didn't have time to, you know, do the stuff other kids did, you know, in school, things like that. Kids were into drugs and things like that. So, and I never really, really got deep into it until I got out the military and started working for the post office, you know, started drinking and using drugs and things like that. And so that happened. And then so this is in Chicago. Then I moved to Minnesota 34 years ago. And actually, I was homeless. I was homeless in Minnesota when I first got here. Got in Minnesota. And somebody, I ain't gonna say somebody, one of the counselors, I was trying to go to some classes to kind of improve myself. And one of the veterans Upward Bound counselors said to me, "Why don't you go to college?" Okay. And I never thought I could do college. I never thought I was smart enough to do college. And I took his advice, and I decided I was going to get a liberal arts degree. And that's all. And so I did that. I got a lot of encouragement because I wasn't an avid reader. I wasn't really, really, I didn't feel college material. So I graduated after 3 years of intermediate classes and then taking real classes. It took me 3 years to get an AA degree, a two-year degree. And then the same counselor advised me to go get my bachelor's degree. I really, really was really afraid, full of fear, not thinking I could do it, but I did it. I went on ahead and I applied to go for my bachelor's degree. And so I went and I got my bachelor's degree at Oxford College over there in Minneapolis. And when I got there, I got mentors and I got in a program called the Ronald McNair Scholar Program that helped students prepare for their master's. You know, I wasn't thinking I was going to do it, but I took, you know, I got in the program anyway. And so, I mean, this is beyond my wildest dream. Here's a guy that dropped out of high school, and I'm getting ready to get my bachelor's, and they're talking to me about a master's. And I was so terrified, I didn't know what to do. But I followed their instructions, and I got letters of recommendation. I got a lot of encouragement. I mean, there's just the counselors and the staff at the colleges really, really encouraged me a lot. And so I went to the University of Minnesota, and I got my master's and became a social worker at the age of 47. And so it took me like...
But I have so many questions. So wait a second. You were homeless. And so what? How does that person convince you to take that first step?
Well, you know, I like I said, we, and when I growing up, we spent a lot of time in church, you know, and I knew about God. But I didn't, the way they did it was kind of like a legalistic thing. And I really, really didn't like the church, but I did get something out of it. And I would be praying, you know, God help me, you know what I'm saying? Not knowing that he heard me, because I really, really had a lot of resentment against the church because there was a lot of legalism in there. I felt, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that. You know, God doesn't really love you. That's what I was thinking. He's just waiting on you to make a mistake so he can clobber you on the head. You know, that's the kind of message I got, but I found out that, you know, he was really, because I was crying out from my heart and asking God, you know, for direction. And so, and how the question you're asking me, how did I go from homeless to that? Just a series of events and visiting the college, you know, came to my mind to just go take some classes, you know, at the community college. And then I found out about a benefit through the VA called the Voc Rehab Program, where they pay for your education. And they're going to pay, they're paying for my intermediate classes as well. So I just said, okay, why not? You know, I got a monthly stipend for going. And when I went to college, when I started college classes, not only did I get a stipend, they paid for the book. They said they paid for the books. They said, you know, less if you keep 2.5 grade point average, we'll continue to do this. And so through much, I don't know, messing up on my part, you know, I just kept doing it and kept doing it and kept doing it. And I kept coming back, you know, to correct some of the mistakes I was making. And so it just happened.
At what point did you stop and say to yourself, oh my God, I was homeless and now I have a master's degree? Was there a point when you were like, how is this possible, or that you were so in shock?
Many times, especially after I got the liberal arts degree, my AA degree, I was just blown away because, and like I said, I was really, really terrified to move on after I got the liberal arts degree. And I was like, how could this be? But as I continued, I gained courage and confidence in what I could do. And I argued a lot of grades. You know, I thought I was doing better than I was doing, and I argued a lot of grades. And a lot of my instructors said, if you do it over, I did a lot of do-overs. So if they said to me, if you do it over, you know, you can get this grade, a higher grade. So I would go home and I would, you know, sometimes, I'm not going to lie, sometimes I'd be crying over papers and I'm doing them over, you know, I'm typing them over on the computer. This is when PCs were coming out. This is back in the 90s, man. And so I did that and got a higher grade. I did a lot of those. I did a lot of do-overs, seriously, because really, really, I wasn't all that smart, and I don't think you have to be smart if you work hard, you know, and keep pushing and keep pushing, and, you know, it can be done, so.
So you get a master's in social work, and what do you then do with that?
Well, what I do is I start working for a company called Mental Health Resources as a mental health I'm going to say serious, working with people with serious and persistent mental illnesses. And what I mean by that is I went out in the community to work with people that were committable, you know, who were maybe threatening their own lives, you know, had was at risk of harming themselves and other people on a regular basis. These are people that are really, really sick. And I went out in the community and I worked with those folks, you know, take them to court if they need it, make sure they take their medications, you know, go to group with them, you know, take them to their therapist appointment, you know, maybe just sit down and have, you know, lunch with them, you know, try to try to get their life in some sort of normalcy, advocate for their rent, you know, advocate for their car payment, move furniture around, deliver furniture. I mean, just because people have a master's degree, I mean, you do all kind of stuff, anything, whatever it takes to keep that client in the community and not have them go to an institution, whatever it takes, you know, help them pay their bills. I did some rep payee, whatever it took, you know, that's what I did.
Why is it so bad for them to go to an institution?
Well, you know, it's you know, they're in an institution with other people and they can't be productive in the community. They're trying to get through their mental illness, you know, out in the community, trying to improve their life, you know, and it's hard to do that if you're in an institution. You know, just on medication, you're just on medication. And but if you're in the community, you got some kind of support in the community groups, a case manager, you know, you live a better quality of life that you wouldn't otherwise live in an institution. So
did you experience any stories of transforming people?
Oh, yeah.
Could share?
Well, yeah, you know, going in, I'm gonna be honest. Going in, I had the life experience, right? And so my idea was, I'm gonna go and straighten these people out. That was my idea. They straightened me out, and because I went in judging, saying, yeah, they should be able to do this, they should be able to do this, blah blah blah. But I don't know. I didn't know where they. Where they came from. I didn't know their life history, you know, how they grew up or any of that. You know, I didn't know them. But after a while, I learned, I realized that I needed to approach them with a non-judgmental attitude, meet them where they're at. A lot of times you get these mental, what they call mental status reports, where they give, you know, they write a report on a person, somebody else, before I get them, and then I read the report. And after I got to know the person, it's not really who they were. What the report said, it was totally different what the person is like, you know? And so I learned that it takes time. You know, people have to trust you. And you got to be consistent, in the, you know, with them. Otherwise, you're not going to see any change. And that takes time, years. I mean, you know, I worked with a guy for a whole year, you know, before I saw a little bit of change. And you got to always congratulate that change, you know, that positive change, always positive affirmations, always building. You know, if you're going to criticize, make sure it's really, really constructive. And but at the same time, you really have to be firm in some areas, especially if it's going to harm you, them, or somebody else. So, yeah. It's just like life.
What were some of the areas that you needed to be firm with a person?
Hold on a second. Somebody was trying to cut in on my phone. Well, one area, if they're showing signs where they're not taking their meds and they're trying to harm themselves, you know, I would have to do something. I have to intervene, and I'd have to, you know, get them committed, you know, because I was a mandated reporter. And so that I had to make sure that they know that. They know it because most of them have been committed before. So they know that if they're doing something like that, because I've had clients who want to harm their mom, their dad, you know, stuff like that, you know, can't let that happen.
You mentioned how you can't be judgmental about the person or situation. How do you do that practically?
How do you do it? Well, you come in with a non-judgmental attitude. Like I said, you get that status report of a person. You got all these things that they did, you know, in their past or whatever. And some they didn't do. It's just a description a lot of times that the person who wrote the report, the way they wrote it. And actually, it shouldn't be written like that. Even if you write something about somebody, you got to always put a positive spin on it. You know, just like, for example, let me see here. What word can I use if a person is, like, they might say a person is conniving, or, you know, they're trying to do this to trick you, or this or that. You know, another way of putting that is they're using their resource skills and to try to get their needs back. You know, and if you can communicate that to them and show them how to do it the correct way, you know what I'm saying? And they understand that, you know what I'm saying? They don't feel so bad about trying it a different way. You know what I'm saying? So things like that, you know, people, you know, anybody can point out a person's bad points or criticize. Mm-hmm. Anybody can do that. I mean, but it takes a lot of effort and insight to look at a person and say, okay, I'm going to say something positive to them, something edifying, and speak to the better part of them rather than to speak to what they did, because that's not really who they are. What they did is not who they are. And if you try to explain that to them and on a consistent basis, it's a process. It doesn't happen overnight. If you tell them one time, they ain't going to get it. You know, you just have to keep saying it, keep saying it. Then they start trusting you. And you keep saying it. And, you know, it just takes time, and you know what I'm saying? And then they become more willing to work with you, because that's really what it's all about, I think, developing a relationship. You know, it's relationship-based. Otherwise, you lose them. So,
where do you think you get your positive attitude from? A lot of people would look at that report of conniving and see nothing wrong with it, but you want to put a positive spin on it. Where does your positivity come from?
Well, I believe it comes from God. I was raised, I had a lot of abuse in my family. You know, I'm not going to get into detail about that, but there was a lot of abuse, physical abuse and emotional abuse in our house. And so we grew up in church, and there was a lot of abuse in the church as well. You know what I'm saying? And I rejected it for that reason for a long time, even after the military. But then I later developed a relationship with God, and that's what changed me, really, that relationship with God, and finding out that He is real and that He loves me just the way I am. So in turn, if He loves me just the way I am, why should I love somebody else the same way? Yeah. And then that book, when I read that book, it confirmed most everything I read in the Bible and what I learned about God as far as treating people with dignity and respect. And so you get what you give out. You know, if you give that out, I mean, you're going to have a more peaceful mindset. You know, if you keep your mind on positive things and want to see people do well, I mean, your life, you get more peace, man. You get more joy in your heart. I mean, it's a reward. You might not see the reward in the people that you work with. Later, they might get better later. You might not even witness that. But it's something that transforms in your heart that makes the difference. It really does.
How did you find God after your childhood of rejecting God, or rejecting the church at least to begin with? How did you then find God eventually?
Dude, a lot of trials that I put myself through.
Tell me about them.
Oh, man. You ask these hard questions. Well, I'm going to tell you the truth. Danny.
Please.
I got married the first time, right? And it was a tough marriage. And the way I grew up was you don't get a divorce. I don't care what happens, right? So I married this lady. You know, it takes two to tango. I'm not going to blame everything on her, but it was really, really tough. And I was afraid to get a divorce. You know, she had some mental health issues. And actually, to be honest, she put a knife through my throat and she did some other stuff. I mean, I was doing some stuff. I wasn't perfect either. But I mean, the relationship was rocky from the beginning after we got married. We got married 4 months later. We separated. We stayed married for 4 years. But then what I did was I started praying for her, you know, because I believe God was telling me to pray for her. You know what I'm saying? And stop complaining about her. And so... And then God started to speak to my heart, and he became real to me, and in that way, and things start to change. Not so much in our relationship, but the young lady decided she wanted a divorce. I wasn't going to do it because I was scared to do it, but she said she wanted it, you know, and we parted on good terms, you know, pretty good terms. And so, but in the meantime, what I brought away from it is a relationship with God. Because when I went into prayer, I was just exploring to see if God was really real, because of the way I was raised, he was just mean God, you know, with these big old mallet want to pop me on the head with it. But he proved that he's a loving God and that he cared about every area of my life, and he wants to talk to me on a regular basis. He wants to commune and have a relationship with me. And I found that out through that marriage.
Well, thank you.
That's when it started.
Yes. So,
yeah.
So how did the relationship with God continue then?
Well, it's continuing now. It continued, right now. I'm just going to say it continues through prayer and meditation. And interacting with other people, because I mean, yeah, you can have a relationship with God, but he put these people here, you know, to use these people in your life, you know, to get to know him better too. You know, people that you want to impart into and people that can impart in your life, people that get on your nerve, that kind of make you a better person. You know what I'm saying? Where you can, you know, you can, get upset with what they do and not the person, not make it personal, just the behavior, just look at the behavior and pray for that person. You know, that don't mean you have to live with them. It just means that, you know, you're not able to get along with them. You don't have to hate them because of what they do. It's what they do. It's not who they are.
Les, I want to go back to your ex-wife. Why did you pray for her initially instead of pray for yourself?
Because when I prayed, I heard God, this is the truth, I heard God said thank me for her. And I believe the reason why he said that was for what it was doing for me. You know what I'm saying? And yeah, she got some issues, and I believe God wanted me to pray for her that she gets better, which changed something in my heart. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? And, but the other side of that, before that, I was just pissed at her. I was upset with her. You know what I'm saying? I was blaming her for everything. You know what I mean? And so it was creating something in my heart that wasn't good. And so, yeah, so that's, I mean, that kind of insight didn't come from my mind. It came from the mind of God. So he put that in my heart to do. I mean, I couldn't have came up with that on my best day.
And so you mentioned prayer and meditation before too. What does that practice look like for you?
Well, you know, I believe that according to, you know, what I read in the Bible too, is that, you know, it's better to listen than to talk to God, because I believe just like a kid that asks a lot of questions. You know, you ask a question, yeah. But, you know, if you're talking, let's say you got parents, if you're talking all the time, the kid, you're not going to get, you know, you ain't going to hear a whole lot. It's the same thing with God, you know. The meditation entails just listening. It's quiet, pushing out all the noise out of your mind, all the worries, all the other stuff, your problems, everybody else's problems, just that chitter chatter, TV stuff, cell phone stuff, all that stuff got to go. You know, you got to get, for me, since the Marine Corps, I'm a 4:30 in the morning guy. I get up 4:30 in the morning, every morning, to do my meditation because everything is still and quiet and it's not a lot of movement. And so that's in that stillness, I do that meditation. And then I read the Bible and stuff like that. And I pray the words of the Bible over my life and over other people's lives. And that's what that looks like. Yeah.
For the meditation, how long do you meditate? Is it just a feeling or?
Well, you know, I think the meditation part gives you it's kind of like the Bible, that book I was telling you about. It kind of gives you an ear to hear what God is saying to you. You know what I'm saying? It kind of, when you quiet down all that noise down, you can actually be in a spiritual place, which I believe we're spirits and God is a spirit, and you can hear. You can hear what he's saying, and you can hear the more you do it, the clearer it becomes. But the more you do this noise out here and you're in this drama and you're listening to everybody else's problem, you're watching the news and all that stuff, you can't hear nothing because you're inundated with all that negativity in your mind. And I think God is a positive God. So he wants to tell you some good stuff. And I want to hear what he's saying. So I want to get really, really still and quiet, and any distraction, it's just like being with your wife or whatever. You know, if I'm with my woman, I don't want no distractions.
So I couldn't agree more with the meditation, quieting the mind so that you can hear what God is actually saying. I think that's such a beautiful way to put it. And how do you deal with the situation of, let's say you're forced to go into the negative situations. Let's say you're driving Uber and someone comes in your car with a negative attitude. How do you not let that cloud over your space?
Well, you know what? That happens a lot, okay? Not only in the car, but outside of the car with other drivers. Mm. I can tell you the incident I had yesterday, actually. Me and a guy almost collided. Almost had an accident, and the guy was really, really kind of cursing me out, blah, blah, this and that. And I rolled the window down. I didn't hear him at first. I rolled the window down to see what he had to say. We didn't have the accident. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, we didn't have an accident. Let's keep it moving because I had to pick this passenger up. But he kept going, you could have hit my car, and blah, 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 this and that and the other. And why did you stop at the stop sign? And so it just came to me because of my relationship with God, I believe. I just rolled the window down and said, have a nice day, sir. You know, and that come out of a relationship with God. In the past, who knows what would have happened. You know, nowadays, people get so angry, man, they'll pull out a gun and shoot you just because, you know, they think they're right, you know. And so I'm learning how to deflect certain situations and circumstances. Even when people get in the car, sometimes I don't say nothing, especially if it's political. That political stuff, people going off and ranting and raving. You know, I had a police in the car a few weeks ago, and he was talking about the police side of the George Floyd thing. You know, the first thing, and they want to ask me my opinion. The first thing I'm saying to myself, don't say nothing, because, you know, those conversations can go places that you don't want them to go. So I think the best thing to do when you find yourself in those situations, you got to pick and choose which, you know, what you want to engage conversations. And I already know that the politics and all that stuff, I don't engage that, you know. But if a person get in the car and they just want to talk, I'm really interested in learning. A lot of times I get students in the car and I'm interested in what they're doing, and you know what I'm saying? I want to how is college and what they're learning, what the major is, all that kind of stuff. I'm really interested in that because I believe I can, especially the brand new students, I believe I can impart something in, you know, in their life that I've experienced. And so if they're open to that and I feel that, you know, sometimes you can feel it. If they're open to it, you can feel it. And then you can say, okay, well, this is what I tried. Maybe you can get something out of it, you know, and, you know, blah, 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 you know. And so then some will take it, some don't. Like I said, when you called, I'm like, wow, this is what I live for. No.
The coincidences and synchronicities of life is what we live for, right? Like the so absurd, like, how is that possible? It has to be God. It has to be something greater than me. And
right.
Yeah.
That's I was so excited when I got that text. I was like, oh my God. All day long. I mean, you bless my heart when you sent that text. It's just like, oh wow. It made my whole day. I was, you know, a couple of days later, I was still thinking about it. So yeah, it was just a blessing to see somebody benefiting from something I introduced to them or something that God put in my heart to give them. I don't want to take the credit, but God, I give God all the glory. Because if I can be used, I'm open for that.
Yeah, so you recommended this book, A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle, which I recommend everyone check out. And right. You said you're on your fourth reading of it. Why four readings?
Well, you know, I believe, you know, I read the Bible on a regular basis. Okay, I'm going to tell you this. You know, that book kind of increased my faith in the Bible. He make references to the Bible a lot. He make reference to a lot of other religions too. And he doesn't sound like to no religion. You know what I'm saying? But he gets all this stuff out of there, you know?
Yeah.
And so it really increased my faith in God in the way he presented it. I never seen it presented that way. And so I'm getting something brand new every time I read it. It's brand new. It's like, oh, I didn't see that before. My book is so written up. I got margin wrote up. I got underline. I got highlight. I got all kinds of stuff in that book. And I'm getting ready to read it next week for the fifth time.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's like, it's no, some books I can read, you know, and put them down. But some books I think is worth picking up. I got a couple like that. It's worth picking up more than once, you know, to kind of go over it and refresh yourself.
Yeah, I agree. The second time reading A New Earth, I was like, oh my God, there's so much here that I didn't pick up the first time. And I'm so excited. What are some of those other books for you that you have to go back to reread?
Well, I got a book by Dr. Caroline Leaf. She talks about the brain and the mind, and I'm interested in that kind of stuff. And she talks about eating. I forget the title of that book, Eat and Grow Smart or something like that. And she talks about the connection between your what you eat and how you think about your food, stuff like that. Kind of, it's similar on the line of Eckhart Tolle about far as treating the earth like it has value. Mm-hmm. But she talks about what you eat and how it affects your body and your attitude, your mood, and all that kind of stuff. And her book I've read maybe about 2-3 times. I read her book. That book, and she's got another one called Who Switched On Your Brain or Switched Off Your Brain or something like that. I've read that a couple of times. And there's another book called A Slight Edge. I forget. I've read that once or twice, so. Yeah, it's a few that I get stuck on, you know. So like I said, that infomercial on Facebook talked about, because I was into some selling marketing stuff, and it was talking about, you know, how you succeed in that, and they said read a book a month, and so yeah.
So going back to the you see a kid in your car who seems eager and open. What types of things do you look out for when people are in your car and you're trying to figure out if they're open to conversation, open to new learning?
Well, if they ask questions, if I start talking and they start asking questions, boy, it's on. You know, if they, you know, a lot of times people get in the car, they don't want to talk. I leave them alone. I respect the boundaries. But if they, I had a kid in the car the other day, you know, and he wanted to talk. He wanted to learn. You can tell. You can pick it up when they're, or when young people want to learn. You can tell. And you can tell when they know everything, you know. You can tell. You just know. And when they start reaching out to you and asking you questions and they're eager to listen to what you have to say, you know, that pulls something out of you. You know, you can feel that pull. When they're doing that, you can feel something on the inside of you that they're pulling on. And so I give it up. When they start pulling, I give it all up.
What's been the most surprising thing you've learned from one of your passengers?
Surprising things?
Yeah. Has there been anything that has been like, oh, wow, I didn't know that, or a connection you didn't expect, or what has there been a story that you were like, how is that possible? Other than this one, of course, but
I was going to say this one. That's awesome, man. I don't know. I'm not sure, Danny. There's many things I've learned about different subjects. Let me see here. You know, I've been doing this for a long time. I probably got like 6,000-7,000 brides. I mean, wow. It's like I've been doing this for a while, and I've I'll just say what I've learned is people are hurting out there. They got all these situations and circumstances like it talks about in the book in their lives. And I have had people where I've had to turn my app off to talk to them, and they ask me to pray for them. I've had situations like that, you know, and I've learned that there's a lot of people hurting and they want somebody to listen to what they have to say. They really want to hear. They don't want you to give them a whole lot of solutions of what you think they should do. They just want somebody to listen to them, empathize with them. They don't care how much you know. They just want to know how much you care about them. If you care about them enough to listen to what they have to say, that means a lot to them. And then if you pray for them, I mean, because I'll ask. I don't just do it. You know, I don't get weird or nothing like that. I said, well, you want me to pray for that situation? You know, and then I get the opportunity to impart whatever I got into their life. And so that's the thing I've gotten out of doing what I do is listening. You know, I mean, there's a lot, man. When you run into people, you're some of this stuff can shock you, you know, that some of the stuff that people go through. I'm a captive audience for them, and they ain't gonna never see me no more. So a lot of times they spill their guts. Mm-hmm. They tell me everything, you know what I'm saying? And that's for them to do that and for me to be there for them is so exciting. So
it's so powerful, and the connection between being a social worker and being a driver for Uber or Lyft is so similar. And I never thought about that until just now. The ability to listen to people, to truly empathize with their situation and understand life from their perspective is something, a skill that you obviously have. And so what goes into listening to someone well? What type of thing are you, how do you listen to others better?
Well, the way I do it is not formulating answers while they're talking. Don't come up with, you know, what worked for me might not work for them. And so I like to look at them, give them my undivided attention, and just let them talk and not come up with answers and not act like I'm the know-it-all about whatever it is that they're talking about, you know, because people just don't respond well to that. You know, in my experience, they really don't. Actually, Danny, I am, when you call me, when you text me, right, what I had done was I was doing some of the same stuff you're doing, you know, but I never got that far. I got a blog, and it's called balancedmen.com, and I haven't worked on it in about a year, and I'm just, and when you did what you did, I'm in the process of getting back on, and you confirmed to me what I'm supposed to be doing. You know, it's the podcasting and getting myself out there and letting people know that there's help out there and maybe presenting some resources and things like that and reaching out more. I mean, and the theme I got is similar to the Uber, and that is meeting people where they are and getting them where they want to be. And that's my kind of theme for that. And so I'm in the process of getting back into that, doing some more blog posting, writing, and putting myself out there so somebody can get some help, you know, for whatever it is that they're dealing with in life. So, yeah, when you text me that, it confirmed my direction, that I was going in the right direction. So that what I presented to you is feet. I'm eating now.
I love it. And we'll have that linked in the show notes, your website and everything like that. I want to ask though about, you know, you mentioned before about how people are lost and how people just need someone to speak to. What do you think are the biggest issues that you're seeing in your cars? Because really, you have the pulse of society unlike anyone else. You are talking to people on a daily basis, wide ranges of people. So what do you think the biggest problems are and how do we go about solving them?
Well, I'm going to tell you, man. Nowadays, right now, it's fear. With this corona and all this stuff in Minneapolis, there's a lot of fear going on, you know, on both sides, the police side and you know, African American side. It's a fear motivated situation where people are not coming together and developing relationships. That's what I think it is, and getting to know each other. You know, if you don't know something about somebody, you know, you get all these imaginations about what they're like, and most of the time it's wrong. It's not even nowhere near what this person's like. But if you get in there and you get to know them, you know, you can kind of dissipate that fear. I mean, with this corona thing, there's a lot of media stuff going on. And just my opinion, I think a lot of people with maybe conditions or whatever, and then the corona thing, and then you mix fear with that, I really think it's harming people. That fear, just that word fear that they're going to die, fear that they're going to get corona. You know, fear, you know, of people, certain colors and all that stuff. It's a lot. Most of it is fear based. And I think if people start to get to really, really get to know each other, you got to spend time to do that. Like I was telling you about my clients. I mean, you know, they at first when I started working with them, you know, they feared what I was like. You know, they feared that I was going to be this tyrant, you know, with authority over their life and commit them and, you know, tell them what to do. And they still had some of that because I was mad. I was controlling their money and, you know, all that stuff. I wasn't controlling it. I was managing it, helping them manage it so they don't get evicted, you know. And so to get that fear to melt, I had to spend time with them and let them know that I'm for their best interest. You know, it takes a minute to get them to convince them, you know. And so it takes time. That only happens over time. And then I don't know, they could say all they want about, you know, they're going to write this law and do this and that and the other. But if people don't come together, you know, and face each other face to face and try to understand each other, it ain't nothing happening. In my guesstimation, it's going to be hard to get something to change if you don't come face to face and really, really deal with it. Just accept each other just the way they are, because you can't change them. Ain't nothing you can do to change nobody.
So, when you have people who are in fear, what would you suggest someone in fear to do, the first step for them to operate more in love or get to the next step, whatever it is from fear?
Yeah, I would say, you know, get the facts, you know, don't. I mean, do your investigating, try to get to know the situation, try to understand the situation or whatever it is you're dealing with. Try to get an understanding of what's going on, because really that fear comes from not knowing, you know, the fear of the unknown. You know, a lot of it comes from that, you know, and you get all these mental monsters in your mind about, you know, people, things and situations, you know, and a lot of times we imagine bad things happening that never happen. It never happened. but and then you got this fear that it's going to happen, you know, and that can create all kinds of problems, you know, for your life. So I would say take your time doing whatever you're doing as far as investigating and try to get some understanding about the situation, and don't rush through it. Let it unfold. Let it do what it's going to do, you know, without interrupting it and trying to control it and all that stuff, man. That never works.
What if you investigated and you get more scared and more fearful?
Well, if you investigate, you get more scared and more fearful. Well, I don't really know what to tell you. You know, I would say keep an open mind. You know, when you investigate, you know, don't be closed-minded about it. You know, I mean, try to understand it. I mean, that's the part when I say try to understand it. Keep your mind open to receive something and not look for the negative. Mm-hmm. You know, don't look for the negative in everything. You know, look for some positives. Look for the positive, period. You know, so when you're investigating, sometimes people look for the negative. You know, I mean, you know, sometimes if you're not thankful for whatever, you know, you're going to look for the negative and everything's negative. And next thing you know, you're on the bottom and negative all over you, all on top of you. And the opposite works for positive. You know, if you put it out there, positive be on top of you. You know, positive stuff start following you. Wherever you go, you know, you're going to run into some negative people, but for the most part, you're going to have more encounters and be more exposed to positive things if you stay positive. And you're going to have a fuller, more exciting life. I'm serious. It just happens that way. I can't explain it.
Les, what are you thankful for or grateful for? What makes you positive?
Well, I'm you know, that's a daily thing, man. I mean, I have to do that daily, you know, because, you know, sometimes we default back in our minds to the what ifs and the negative stuff. But on a daily basis, what I do in the morning when I get up, I say, God, I don't know anything. This is the day you made. I need help to get through this day because I don't even know what's going to happen. You're the one made it. And so I'm just going to ask you to help me through this day put, you know, whoever you want to put in my path that I can make a positive impact on, you know, and help. I'm in a position like help. You know, I don't want to try to be the know-it-all guy. I don't want to be that person. I don't know nothing. I'm just... In the scheme of things, you know, in the scheme of things, look at all these people all over the world, and I'm looking at how high God is, and all this stuff has been created. I'm so, in a way, insignificant. You know what I'm saying? In the scheme of things, how can I think I know everything? You know, if I humble myself, what I try to do is stay humble, in a big way, because you know, pride can come up, can be a thing that comes up in you, and if you don't watch it, if you don't stay aware, it can overtake you. So I try to be mindful of being humble and asking God to help me all the time, all day long. Help me in this situation, you know, because sometimes I think I know the answer. But every time I consult and ask God which way to go, and I wait, I get the answer. And it's usually not the thing that I thought of. You know, it's sometimes it's weird that it works, you know what I'm saying? Because it didn't come out of this mind. It came out of a more creative, I want to say creative, intelligent mind, the mind, you know? Mm-hmm. So he just puts it in my mind, you know, so I can get some help and somebody else can experience from the help I got. So
going back to when you were homeless, what got you through those days and those weeks? How long was it?
Well, I'm going to tell you, it was a period of maybe a year or two, about a year or two. It was, you know, Danny, I mean, it had to be God. It had to be God that got me through it. I lived with my brother. I've lived, you know, in rooming house, you know, after I got off the street. And that's how I really, really got into school. I got into a rooming house. And when I got into that rooming house, I found out the benefit of being able to go to school. And I got the help from those people. So it was a chain of events of things happening in my life. And I believe it was God leading and guiding me to where I needed to be. You know, when you encounter different people, you don't know why you encountered that person. But that person could be taking you to the next level, you know. But I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that back then. You know, somebody might say something. Actually, when it comes to mind, somebody told me about the Veterans Upward Bound program and what they were doing. And then I went over there to investigate. And then one thing led out to another. And then that's how I got hooked up with school. So, you know, you never know, you know, if we value people, you know, when we meet them and try to look for something positive, we get something of value and we get direction in life. I mean, I believe that's the way God got it set up, you know, for us to love each other and connect with each other and things like that. So,
well, yeah. This has been such a beautiful conversation. Is there anything else you'd like to add or mention before we wrap it up?
Well, it's I really appreciate you texting me, Danny. You just, I mean, as I said earlier, what you're doing is what I had planned to do, but I never put it into action. Now, you know, it's kind of like an effect. It's kind of like a domino effect. I mentioned the book to you, and then you get something out of it. Then you bring it back. And now I see that what you're doing is benefiting other people, and God is showing me I'm supposed to be doing the same thing in the way that you're doing it, you know, with the podcast. And what's the title of your, what's the theme of what you're doing? Your theme.
It's just pursuing the highest version of ourselves.
Right. See, now I'm looking at the balanced part of ourselves, all three areas, our spirit, soul, and body. And I believe that can, you can manifest a better version of yourself when you have a balanced life all the way around. So it's the same thing. It's just worded different. You're presenting that perspective, that side of it. And then I'm going to be presenting, you know, this side of it. And then I'm doing my part. I was listening to Michael Jackson yesterday and that song he wrote, Looking at the Man in the Mirror, If You Want the World.
Song.
Yeah. And I was thinking about what I wanted to do, especially I was going in that direction. But then after you sent that message, I was even more encouraged. So now I'm putting together a post about giving, you know, and I'm meditating on that and asking God what he wants me to communicate out there, put out there regarding giving. And that's what you're doing when you do what you do. You're giving. You're giving something to the world, to this planet. So that's what God put on my heart to write about. And so Yeah, that's all I got to say, man. I really appreciate you contacting me and getting in touch with me. And I just hope all the best for you. And I know you're going to do great things, man. I just see it. It's just like, you're in there. That's your book back there?
That's the podcast cover that that my brother.
You're going to be writing a book too, right?
One day. God willing.
Oh, yeah. I believe that. Yep.
Les, thank you so much for your time and wisdom. And you've given so much to me, so I'm so grateful for you. I'm looking forward to reading that post on giving. And I really appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate you as well.
Hope you guys enjoyed that conversation. It was one near and dear to my heart, and I'm grateful for you listening until the final seconds. If you have any thoughts or feedback about the episode, let me know on Twitter at HeyDannyMiranda. New episodes of the podcast coming out Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Grateful for you listening. Thank you, thank you, thank you from the bottom of my heart, and I'll see you guys in the next one. Peace.